John Breaker One. This is Shark Pants Free Radio. Gamers, get your ears on because we're blowing the speakers out.
Grimdark Live. Weekly webcast for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Warhammer worlds. Don't miss our live show on Thursdays, but for now, you've got us on sloppy seconds with our podcast with the Grimdark Gang. It's time once again for Grimdark Live.
Hey, welcome to Grimdark Live, your weekly webcast for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Warhammer worlds. I'm your host, Patrick, and as always, my co-host, Steve. What do you hear? What do you say, bud?
Yeah, we got a lot of things to talk about here as we draw towards the end of the year.
You are not kidding. We got a lot to talk about, man. We're going to be getting into that. We're going to be talking about Slaves to Darkness, top of the news, and that's really the only thing we got in the news right now is Slaves to Darkness. I think that's enough, man. That's going to be a huge release. That's kind of one of the pinnacle armies in Age of Sigmar, or fantasy, wouldn't you say? I mean, going all the way back to Warhammer Fantasy Battles, yeah?
Well, my God, I mean, you're talking about the Army of the Lord of the Apocalypse, so it better be a good book.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that, too. We're going to briefly touch on that, and if it, if in fact it is going to be a good release, or if they're just, in a word, a phrase that I've heard, are they just polishing more tin? So we're going to see. I hope it is, because I really love them as an adversary. That's not my my army or my cup of tea or my playstyle, but I love the idea of chaos divided. So that's going to be a good one. We got that in the news, and of course, we're going to probably swim in that topic for a little bit, but we got a better topic coming up. Steve, what are you going to be touching on today, bud?
Well, we're definitely going to be touching on how there are rules in this game that are misinterpreted, and they're often misinterpreted from one group to the next. So that's going to be one of the things we're going to discuss.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that has to do with, and we're going to touch on that, I think a lot of the misinterpretations have to do with your, and don't get me wrong with this phrase here, I just don't know how else to put it, so I'm going to put it as best I can, your rank-and-file gamers, you know, the guys that that go to the store, I call them the lunch pail gamers, you know, they go to their local game store, their local GW store, and they get out there and they play, versus the guys that are the tournament hogs, because a lot of times those rules can get intermingled, mixed up. In other words, what I like to call as-written GW rules versus the TO ticklers, the little house rules that maybe some tournaments have. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think that would be.
Yeah, and you know what? And don't get me wrong, we're gonna blame GW a little bit on some of the confusion too. But yeah, we got that great topic coming up. And if there's time, and let me stress that again, if there's time, we're gonna do a faction focus, something I want to start spearheading into here in the show, it's gonna be on the Ogre Maw tribes. And so we're going to be getting into that a little bit, kind of a list that I worked up, because I think people are kind of down on the army a little bit. Some of the stuff that I've been seeing on the boards, and of course, a recent faction release video that just came out by a pretty popular guy in the community. Kind of wanted to address that a little bit. So yeah, but here we are, man. We're back. We're back from Thanksgiving. So Steve, how was your Thanksgiving, man? Did you stuff the turkey or choke the chicken, man? How did it go?
No, I had a very nice time with my family. We had a very nice Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah, it's always is great to get together and sit down and sit there with your freaking loved ones. Yeah, it was great. No, I actually had a great one too. I had a really good Thanksgiving. It was a nice time off, and I'm happy to be back. But you know, folks, you're gonna have Grimdark Live here for the next couple of weeks before we break for the new year. So we got a lot of good stuff coming up before the end of the year, and before the end of today's show. And as always, we've got the question of the day and the closing thoughts towards the end of the show.
Hey, you Grimdark Goons. Thank you all so much for listening to our Grimdark Live podcast. If you're new to the Grimdark Live experience or new to our podcast and like what you hear, please follow this podcast and pass us along to your friends. Let us know what you think about Grimdark Live in the show's comment sections, and let us know just how we're doing. Also, don't forget to catch us live on Thursdays. And if that ain't enough for you, check out our website at www.grimdarklive.com. That's grimdarklive.com. Anyway, thanks for listening, following, and just being awesome.
we got a lot that we're going to get into, man. So enough of this palabra. We should jump right into this, man, and get right with the news. Steve, you ready, man?
Let's go.
All right, let's do this. So, Slaves of Darkness. That's really the thing that I think we should be talking about. That's the big piece in the news. At least the only thing that I'm really paying attention to. So if I'm being unfair to maybe, you know, I don't know, some new type of glue bottle or, you know, paint, you know, holding thing, you know, whatever, that's great. But you know what? I think this is the big news. Wouldn't you agree? Slaves of Darkness is what we got to be talking about.
Yeah, I think that, and how appropriate too, you know, with the end of the year, the end, you know, the Lord of the Apocalypse. This is an army that had to happen. This is an army that a lot of our Chaos players have been waiting for. They want to see what this looks like. They want to see what our Chaos hordes look like. This guy is the major player for the Chaos realms, or for the Chaos factions, I should say. This book had to happen. It had to happen. And I'm glad it happened now, because there are too many important books that are coming up in the very near future. And this world is quickly being rounded out, which I am really happy about.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I'm kind of happy to see it happen because for a long time,
it had
to
happen.
Well, it had to. But, you know, for a long time, you and I, being a couple of old dice chucking bastards, you know, we saw our previous game destroyed. And so we've been kind of wanting to see this rich meta and this world kind of start becoming, as you put it, kind of round out and starting to having some sense. And I think with the reintroduction of bringing in Slaves of Darkness, and I'm going to say reintroduction lightly, because, you know, when they did this before with the Everchosen, I don't think that quite hit the mark. Because first of all, Everchosen by its own self with Arcan in that book was a complete flop. And I think what we're going to go through today
is one played them.
No.
No one played them.
Yeah,
Randy is the only, our buddy Randy is the only one that ever played them. I never saw another person play them.
That's exactly right. And, you know, but here's the thing, folks, you know, the Mortal Realms will shake beneath the tread of the Slaves of Darkness once more. And this weekend, the Forces of Chaos are going to be receiving an upgrade with the new battle tome for the Slaves of Darkness and some new model designs in the Chaos Warriors. And this new, I don't know what you really want to call him. Like, he's the new Chaos Lord guy.
Yeah,
right?
He's just your generic Lord on a beastie. It's basically a compliment to the Stormcast.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the parallels that they're putting back on the Stormcast. You know, I tried to get into Stormcast. They just weren't my cup of tea, but I like what the Bone Reapers have done, kind of Nagash's answer to the Stormcast. And now you've got, you know, basically this new Chaos Lord on what almost looks like a Drakoth rider, if you ask me. I mean, it looks pretty similar, I guess.
Yeah, I think what's important to remember, too, is that one of the nice things about this book is that this world is no longer just the good guys versus the bad guys. It's no longer just order. You know, it's no longer just the Empire versus Chaos. You know, now we have a bunch of major players. And with Arcan now coming back into the picture, we're almost done. We're almost finished with this pantheon of gods. And I think the only thing now that we're waiting for would be the Elven deities. And I know that's coming next year.
Yeah.
But this book is really going to be a truly a Christmas gift to our Chaos players, because I think the reason a lot of people weren't playing Chaos Undivided or, you know, our Chaos Horde is because the book was quite frankly horrible and no one played it. And I think that it was quite obvious that in almost every single tournament that we've been to, local game stores, no one's playing this army. No one was playing this army. No one was interested in playing this army.
Yeah, and you know, go ahead.
I'm hoping that changes.
I think it will. You know, there's from what I'm hearing on the boards and what I'm seeing from some of my contacts out there, that there's been a lot of tweaks to the army. And I'm going to say this right now to everyone. Folks, get ready for a lot of tweaks to Slaves of Darkness. Army building is also going to be super flexible from what I'm going to understand. This army is going to have a lot of ways to put together an army. Slaves of Darkness is one of those armies that allows players to pick a theme and then basically just go to town. You know, if you want to have a horde of barbarians, you can start with the battle line and then add champions as needed. But if you want a wall of armor-clad Chaos Warriors, start with them and pick the heroes that you think would, I guess, lead a wall of metal, if you will. But if you want monsters and demon princes, there's also a build for that too. I mean, what they're kind of, it sounds like to me what they're doing is kind of what they started doing way back when they released the Maggot King of Nurgle. And they have these sub factions, you know, Beasts of Chaos have their different herds, you know, Daughters of Cain have their, what do they call those things? Their covens or whatever. Yeah. The covens.
The Medusas.
Right. This thing is going to have a lot of stuff. So Slaves of Darkness goes on pre-order on December 7th. It's going to be in everyone's sweaty palms by December 14th. So this Saturday is the pre-order for this army. And Steve, I mean, you've kind of given a little bit of your kind of thoughts on why the army needs to come out now and what it means for the meta. But, I mean, you've been playing in this hobby a long time. And what are your thoughts, early thoughts? I want to say that, too, before we really get into the meat and potatoes of this here. But early thoughts on the pantheon of the Chaos Undivided.
Well, this rounds out Chaos.
Well,
yeah. We have completely now finished Chaos. I don't think there's anything left for Chaos, as a matter of fact. We have the humans, which is Slaves to Darkness. And then we have Blades of Khorne. We have Slaanesh. We have Tzeentch. I mean, I know that there's big talk, big rumors out there that Tzeentch is coming in the new year. I don't know why. Tzeentch is still a good army. I mean, I know people are poo-pooing it now because there were some changes in the FAQ, but guys, Tzeentch is still a perfectly viable army.
Yeah, and the book's outdated. I think that's what they're leaning towards.
Still playing it.
Yeah. So. Yeah, but from what I'm to understand, and I hope I'm wrong on this, but I got a little bit of a tingle in the almonds that I'm probably fair to close on this one. You know, from what I understand, that some items that have been revealed so far to me seem the same but newer. The same, but polished up a bit. You know, does that make sense?
As long as they're still effective items, that's okay.
Yeah, and you know what I mean by this is they're what everyone's kind of talking about. One of the two main topics you've been seeing on the boards is this Aura of Chaos. Now, the Aura of Chaos ability allows Slaves of Darkness heroes to enhance nearby units and share their Chaos mark. So marks are still a thing, as they were since, what, 6th edition Warhammer Fantasy Battles.
Good Lord, yeah, as they should be.
Yeah, but they appear to be more polished, and that's kind of where I'm going back to saying that the idea here is that maybe GW just polished a tin here a little bit. So apparently units can get rewarded for things like, you know, fighting in close formation, etc., or, you know, doing something great. So it doesn't appear to be a blind, you know, here's your mark and you can share my abilities like past editions. It looks like they're going to get some type of an advancement to their abilities for sharing in different marks, you know?
Yeah, that reminds me of, it's been so many years. I think that was in 6th, 7th edition, where as you killed heroes, I believe, you would gain abilities throughout the game.
That was Hero Hammer. That was 6th edition. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. There were some crazy abilities they had, but it was fun. I mean, it was always fun to, yeah, you know, just to see that lord, you know, bulk up during the game.
Yeah. I mean, I have a brief memory of that because that was kind of my entrance into the hobby. But I do remember Hero Hammer, and I do remember being exposed to that as kind of a new thing at that time. But speaking of Marks of Chaos, you know, you can mix and match these within your army. Now, this is one question I have for you, Steve, and see if we can walk down the memory lane on this one. So sure. as you mix and match these within your army, offering different loads of thematic and tactical varieties for your forces, you know, for instance, you can have your fast moving forward troops. They could possess the mark of Slaanesh, while everyone knows they're breakneck fast, while your wizards could bear the mark of Tzeentch. So it seems to be different to me, because if I'm reading this into this correctly, does this negate the old, what am I trying to say here, Steve, enemy status that some of the Chaos gods had for each other?
They used to have this animosity between the gods, basically, whereas like Khorne hated Slaanesh because Slaanesh was a manipulator and Khorne was, you know, brute force and just kill everything that moves. And Tzeentch and Nurgle always had a feud. I mean, all the Chaos gods hated each other. I mean, which is the true nature of Chaos, you know.
Yeah.
All of them were constantly vying for the number one spot, and none of them could ever achieve it. Tzeentch always fancied himself, you know, the genius of the bunch, and yet he would, you know, get outsmarted by Slaanesh or Nurgle all the time. So the pantheon of Chaos gods have always fought with each other, and it kind of reflected that in the game. In other words, I think there were certain armies where if you had a lord like of Nurgle, you had to have Nurgle troops. Like, they couldn't have mix and match. And then there was one edition, I believe, where they could be mixed and no one cared.
Mm-hmm.
I hope they're bringing back an element of that, because that would make the game more enjoyable to me as an opponent of Chaos. I would love to see that again.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And of course, the only Chaos army I play are my Beasts of Chaos. And of course, that's because they play like Destruction, which is my main faction. So, but going back to Marks of Chaos here, you know, you touched on something with allied units. You know, as an example, what Steve and I are talking about here is you can take a Lord of Blights to bolster, say, a big unit of Nurgle marked Chaos Warriors. And sure. If you think about this, and this is kind of, you know, I've got my Maggotkin book here. I mean, with his Plague of Flies ability, this could bolster the Warriors to make them unbelievably durable, but also make them much harder to even hit in the first place in close combat. So again, you know, here we are looking at something old that is new again with some polish, I guess, if I can keep using that term. But so I think we're going to see a lot of that. And I'm kind of happy in one way that we're keeping that old. I hope we do. I should say that we're keeping the old animosity between the gods. You know, I hope that's still there. So, you know, that's pretty much what we got in the news. But we're going to keep rolling with Slaves of Darkness right out of the news and into a topic. Hey gang, I wanted to take a break in today's show to introduce one of our sponsors and a great store for all of your hobby needs. That's GameStorm Gaming in Lamont, Illinois. Open 7 days a week, 12 to 12.
GameStorm Gaming has got you covered for all of your hobby and gaming needs. They got Magic the Gathering, War Machine, X-Wing, Game of Thrones, Force of Will card game, PC gaming and repair, Warhammer 40K, and Age of Sigmar, and a ton more. Grab paints, brushes, cases, dice, and a lot more at GameStorm Gaming in Lamont, Illinois.
Stop in and see John and the gang there at GameStorm Gaming, located at 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois, or check them out on their website at GameStormGaming.com. Again, that's www.GameStormGaming.com.
They also stay open past midnight for special cases and events, so get over there and get your nerd on with GameStorm Gaming. 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois, 630-243-9330. Again, that's GameStorm Gaming, 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois.
GameStorm Gaming is a proud sponsor of Grimdark Live. We hope to see you there. Here. So let's get into the lore here a little bit on Slaves of Darkness. Can we do that, Steve, or do you got something else
sure,
you want to touch
let's
on?
Sure,
let's go. All right. So the lore... All Champions of Chaos, as everybody knows, is...
Well, All Champions of Chaos want to become a Demon Lord someday. That is their goal.
Right.
In the fluff, of course. You know, all Champions of Chaos are trying to become immortal.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, Well, let's kind of pause right here. Are we having some technical difficulties? Because I'm looking here and it looks like we're all good. You still got the screen? Are you good?
I just see gray screen for you.
Interesting. All right. Well, if anyone else out there has any issues, because I'm seeing that the screen is showing fine on our YouTube.
Okay, that's fine.
All right,
keep rolling.
We will keep going. So, let's. Why don't you do this? Let me double check it to make sure, and then you kind of give us a little breakdown of the lore as you know it with the Slaves of Darkness.
Sure. All chaos lords start off as just normal humans. Obviously, they come from, you know, a variety of barbarian tribes. They could also be traitors to the Empire. I believe the story of Archaon is that he was once a Templar Knight of the Empire, and. And he betrayed his oath to Sigmar and became a Lord of Chaos. But all Chaos Lords, their goal is to become a demon, to become immortal, to have their efforts for Chaos rewarded. And so that was what they used to refer to as gifts of Chaos back in the day.
Right.
So you will notice that I'm sure a lot of this fluff that's coming out right now is probably going to reflect that they're kind of going back to that, where they're having champions of each of the factions again.
Yeah. And you know, I'm actually really happy that that is, and again, just to kind of back up a little bit and not to kind of trump what Steve was saying, because, you know, his commentary is spot on, probably a lot better than what I'm going to meander on here with. But all champions of chaos, they walk what they call a path of glory. And that path ends with either death, spawndom, or ascension into the ranks of some kind of demon prince.
Yeah.
You know, a new in-game mechanic that I'm going to jump on now. I wasn't planning on getting to this part here, but since you brought that up, what they're saying is a new in-game mechanic, there's going to be some random tables. So a la, you know, Idneth Deepkin, or a la, you know, maybe they're not random, but you see the point here. They're kind of going back to those tables. So I guess it works when you roll after you slay a hero or a monster, and you could see some incredible new powers, including transformation into a demon prince.
Love it.
Yeah. Or
absolutely love it.
Yeah. Or that hero might transform into a spawn. So it looks to be an advanced model after the Beasts of Chaos Gave Spawn herd, because as you know, I play that army and I love Gave Spawn as one of my more favorite ones. When I saw this, I kind of clapped out loud, because what happens is when in Gave Spawn, when you killed one of their heroes, you automatically can put a spawn in that place. So it took some of maybe your non-general type heroes and you thrust them into combat as almost like a torpedo, because you almost got like a 2-for-1 as far as holding up, say, a unit that you didn't really want to get into combat with your other unit. It was a great ploy to put in. So I guess, you know, as I said, this kind of seems to me to be more of a chaos, you know, Gave Spawn herd copy thing, which is going to be in their new battle tome. So a bit of recycling there, but that's okay too, right?
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah,
I think they're getting back to the fun of that chaos players used to have when they could take their champions and try to, you know, gain greater glory throughout the battle. Which,
you're right.
I mean, that's what chaos is about.
Yeah, there's not a lot of common sense thought there.
Yeah, they're the ultimate narcissists. They're the ultimate glory hounds. They, you know, they want to impress the gods. And the funny thing about it is, back in the day, you could sometimes end up being a spawn if, like, you ran or something. Like I said, it's been so many years, but people would actually have to take out their model, which was hilarious, and actually put a spawn model. You could turn if you turned into a spawn, the rules were, if you had a spawn model, you could then put it on the table in place of that hero. And that kind of stuff is exactly what the chaos gods would do, because they're fickle.
Yeah.
You know, have killed a goblin champion and think, oh, great, man, I'm, you know, now I'm going to get rewarded. Well, Korn may look at that and say, nah, that, you know, you're a prankster. That was nothing. And he may turn you into a spawn.
That is awesome.
That was the funny part about playing chaos.
Yeah.
You never knew what was going to happen next with these heroes.
And I think I like the way you put that, because I really hope, now just hearing you say that they are actually going to be going back to something like that.
Oh, I hope so. I'm praying that they're doing that.
But you know what I like they're doing? They're kind of keeping the ilk and the flavor of the game amongst all the armies that have already come out past this, because there's going to be 4 new sub-factions. From what I understand, the sub-factions are going to be the Ravengers, the Despoilers, the Cabalists, and of course, the Everchosen. And so, again, the 4 new sub-factions are going to be the Ravagers, the Cabalists, the Despoilers, and the Everchosen. And the interesting thing about all of these is that the Ravagers are all about classic chaos, like you were saying, Steve. From what I understand, it's going to be up to 5 friendly Ravager heroes can have the same or can have multiple command traits in addition to your general. So a la Slaanesh, they're kind of cherry picking, you know, what one of the Slaanesh, you know, out of the Hedonite book can do, while Ravagers generals can summon Marauder horsemen, or Warcry warbands. They can actually summon those guys onto the table, from what I understand, you know, who all are going to have the cultist keyword to, you know, help join the fray. The second one, obviously, are the Cabalists, and these guys cater to the magic side of chaos, you know, binding. But and one thing I want to bring in here, my notes, and I want to make sure I'm getting this right here, is that these guys can bind enemy spells and unleash dark rituals. Now, what this means is they can essentially, now get this, Steve, and I want to hear your thoughts on this one. They can take over enemy spells, apparently. I mean, can you imagine using somebody else's Purple Sun to destroy one of their units? This is new.
Well,
this is what the Cabalists can do.
It depends on what and how powerful this ability is. If they can take over endless spells, I think that's funny, actually.
Well, that's what they're saying.
if they can take over army specific spells like Itchy Nuisance or Hand of Gork, wow, game changer.
And I, from what I understand, and again, this is all speculation here a little bit, but from what I understand, with this, you know, this ability to bind enemy spells and unleash, you know, dark rituals, they can do just that, you know, so.
Well, if they are able to do that, I think that's hilarious, and I cannot wait to play against them.
Mm-hmm.
Some people get annoyed by abilities of certain armies.
Oh, don't get me started. You're absolutely right.
I don't. That never has bothered me. I actually think that's kind of funny.
Yeah.
When you could do that, because I think the people that would get upset with that would be like the guys we used to know back in the day, you know, those tournament guys where everything was in set order and they knew what everything could do. And whenever they ran into an army that was something that would throw a wrench into their plans, they would get upset and they'd get all worked up.
Sure.
I think this thing right here is funnier than hell. And I think it would be a lot of fun to play against that kind of craziness. And it fits what they are. Their army abilities and the things that they can do to you should be chaotic.
Right. Right. And that's a great point. But, you know, I'm stuck on one word, and maybe this is just why I shouldn't be. But when I was listening to one of the Stormcasts, you know, they use that phrase that I just stole, and that's binding their dark magic to enemy spells. Now, when I think of the word bind, I think, you know, the synonyms, right? You know, attaching, requiring, obliging, you know, constraining. So yeah. I wonder if it's something where they can take their spell and add it on top of, if you will, to the other spell or the other, you know, take part of their, you know, take control of somebody's endless spell or something. So those are the first two, the Ravagers and the Cabalists. Then we have the Despoilers. And these guys represent the Slaves of Darkness at their most unholy, if there can even be such a thing. These guys are solely dedicated to their Demon Prince Overlords. Now, this one I was a little fuzzy on, you know, collecting information on it. So apparently, their deal is that they can mess with shooting armies. They're also capable of turning any terrain into a line of sight blocker. So there's going to be a heck of a lot of negative ones to possibly negative twos if they stack on something for these guys. I don't know, how that's going to work. I don't know if they can hide behind a little fence and say, now you can't see me or something. I'm not sure. But the Despoilers are kind of this dedicated group, and how they actually plan to the demons. I think there's a reason why GW's been a little held back on their description with that one. That one might be the kick in the tallywhacker that I think we're all kind of curious about.
It's interesting.
Yeah. I'm not sure about that one.
Well, I think right now it's all speculation. But if this book doesn't have something unique to it that's going to appeal to the average chaos player, they're just going to stick with their regular chaos army they have now.
Sure.
I mean, the idea here, I would think, would be that GW would be saying, okay, if you're tired of playing Nurgle, if you're tired of playing, you know, Slaanesh, if you're tired of playing Tzeentch, this army will give you a little flavor of all of them.
Right.
And I'm hoping that that's what this book is going to be.
You know, I really, and I'm not going to get into this. I promised before the show that I wouldn't get into this, but I felt, especially with my beloved Ogre Maw tribes, that we all got spoiled with, and with Gloomspite Gitz. I'll be completely honest with you. And I know there's ebb and flows to, you know, the books, because when Magakin and Nurgle came out, you know, I'm not a Nurgle guy, but I really loved the book. And I thought Legions of Nagash.
Nurgle is a solid book.
Yeah. But I thought Legions of Nagash was kind of eh. I thought Cities of Sigmar fell flat, if you ask me.
Well, Legions of Nagash, I think, was probably one of the more boring armies to play. And I say this, and I know we have a lot of death players that listen to us and that are our good friends. But Legions of Nagash was often with Nagash.
Sure.
In other words, I never saw a build of Legions of Nagash without Nagash or one of the Mortarks.
Right.
And I wish, and I know some people are saying out there, well, you know, why would I play anything else if Nagash is great? True, I get it. But you never want an army to be so reliant on a specific character that it, in the end, it ends up losing its character as an army.
That's right.
Because, I mean, I look at like Legions of Nagash armies now, and they're just a snooze fest.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. It's the same army every time. It's Nagash, it's Grimghast Reapers, it's big blocks of skeletons, and maybe a few pound puppies.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, what else is there to the army?
Zip.
I would be bored out of my mind playing that army because, yeah. Oh, gee, I just throw 50 million spells at plus 75 every time I throw them. You know, really?
Whoop-de-doo.
Why is that exciting to play? It's boring. Yeah. Nobody, yeah. You know, ugh.
Whoop-de-doo. But, you know, I digress. You know, and I'm sorry, folks. I'm the one that caused this left-handed Albuquerque here. But, you know,
it's an important point.
Well, the only reason I brought that up is ever since Gloomspite Gitz, the most recent book that's out, I think we've
solid
been spoiled.
Book.
I think we've been spoiled because I'm going to say this. I really like the idea, and I'm one of the few people that actually likes the models of Bone Reapers. But, hey, let's face the facts. They're kind of a cult following. It didn't really take off like I think GW was hoping. A lot of the independent stores were hoping. A lot of GW stores were hoping. It didn't really take off.
But there's a reason for that.
Yeah. And I think, and if we have time later in the show, and it's only a big if, you know, I think Iron Guts has kind of fallen way short. There's a lot of holes in the Iron Guts book. And I'm not here to completely mother F that or anything, but I'm just trying to say that coming back to Slaves of Darkness, I really hope that this book starts to pick up where Gloomspite left off. You know, that they're able to take this old original army, what I call one of the pillars of this, you know, to me, in my mind, I would say the pillars of this game would be Empire, Dwarves, Chaos, and Orcs and Goblins. Not even so much elves, to be quite honest with you, because
yeah, and they're not.
But I would say that. So when I look at the, and again, folks, this is just me bantering on. I'm not saying that these are the four original armies, but in my mind, the four pillars or original armies or the essence of what this game is, Chaos holds a strong spot in that. And I think that if they fall short,
my God,
yeah, if they you know, stink up the shit house, I think that's going to be a real problem in the community. But
Slaves to Darkness needs to be as versatile as Gloomspite Gitz.
Yes, exactly.
I think Gloomspite Gitz has everything. There is not a single Gloomspite Gitz player that can look me in the eye and say, I don't have what I need to make this army successful. Because, quite frankly, if you can't find what is successful in the Gloomspite Gitz books,
you probably
shouldn't be playing Warhammer altogether.
Well, if you can't find it, you haven't cracked the cover of the book. But one of the, and before we get to the fourth and last, you know, group as far as the new sub factions, I just want to touch on one thing that Steve and I are here talking about as far as what I think lends to our curiosity of what this book is going to be like. You know, go back to two. I'm going to use two other Chaos armies. You know, let's look at Nurgle. They had a great book, Magikin of Nurgle.
Phenomenal book.
Now, if I were to go to their wheel, the wheel of corruption, mm-hmm. We've already kind of seen what they're planning on doing here with Slaves of Darkness. They're doing something very similar,
sure,
which is completely fine. But then if I were to go back and I were to look at the hosts of Slaanesh, that there again, Hedonites of Slaanesh is a fantastic book, whether or not it fits your fancy or not as an army. But they're taking a page out of that book as far as multiple heroes and generals being able to have this, you know, command abilities. In other words, multiple generals. And I think that was the Pretenders. I think it was the Invaders. I think the Invaders, you could have up to three generals instead of one. So, and then I think in Pretenders, your general could have two different command traits instead of one. So they're kind of cherry picking what they've already done, which, you know, I think one of the things that made Gloomspite so damn good was it was almost completely original. And I think what made Magotkin and Hedonites of Slaanesh, they delivered those new concepts to us. And so far, kind of what I'm hearing, I don't see a lot of the new stuff being delivered I just, like I said, it seems to me that Slaves of Darkness is kind of polishing that old tin. And maybe that's a lousy thing to say at this point, but that's my thought.
No, and that's okay. I mean, it, as long as it serves the basic needs of your Chaos players, as long as it gives them the versatility of a Chaos Undivided army, as long as it makes Archaon the rightful badass that he should be, I have no problems with the with anything else with that book. I mean, we can rehash Chaos Warriors and Knights and still have it be a great book.
Okay. Yeah, I like the way you put that. I like the way you put that. So to kind of round this part of the conversation out, because I know that, you know, again, folks, I took us all off on the left turn at Albuquerque. So there's going to be, there's four new sub-factions, and we've kind of already briefly gone over the Ravagers, the Cabalists, the Despoilers, and now, last but not least, the Everchosen. These are Archaon's own hand-picked forces. And the news is...
Yeah, that's his Praetorian Guard.
That's it. And the news is these warriors can fundamentally affect the flow of a battle with this other piece that people are talking about is this Dark Prophecy rule. Have you heard about this one, Steve?
I have not. Explain. Yeah.
So the Dark Prophecy rule, this has really been largely talked about on the boards recently, massively talked about. It was hinted at about a week ago on one of the Warhammer Stormcasts. So this is what it does. Essentially, it lets the player know in advance, and I'm going to say this right now as a TO myself, as what I like to call a fun competitive player, I'm not thrilled about this one. This one kind of pinches me a little bit. So here it is.
Okay, what does it do?
This is what the Dark Prophecy rule is. This lets the player know in advance if, in a sense, if you're due a double turn. So here's what it is. This ability previously required a War Scroll battalion. If you remember in the Everchosen book, now that that's not the, I only know that because I have the book. I buy all the books. Now the Everchosen have access to this all the time. So here's what it is.
Okay.
If Archaon is your general and on the battlefield, the player rolls a dice and keeps the result hidden from his opponent at the start of the next battle round, before players determine who has first turn, the player reveals the result. So on a 1-3, the opponent takes the turn. On a 4+, the Chaos player takes the turn. Nah, I don't see any real opportunity here for cheating, do you?
Okay, here's how I would fix that.
Okay, let's hear it. Throw it out.
I would say that no, I don't think that's a bad rule at all. I think it's kind of a fun rule, actually.
Okay.
Hopefully, I know I'm going to get murdered for this one.
I might be the first in line.
Hopefully, you can rely on your opponent being an honest person. I just heard 67 to 80 people just laugh out loud. But,
Sure. Adepticon.
Here's
and
what you could
LVO
do. Here's
and,
what you could do. If you had a fear of it, you could possibly. I know this is going to sound silly, but it's just something I'm thinking quite off the cuff. You could take something as simple as a Dixie cup and take the dice and place it underneath the cup. And the cup does not get revealed and the dice does not get revealed until, you know, until it's time for them to use it. I think it's a great rule. I mean, honestly, I do. I think it's a great rule.
You know what I think would have been better? Honestly, because let's look, and this is what I thought about even when the original Everchosen book, when I had it in my sweaty palms.
So let me ask you this before you go on to that. I want to ask you one question about this rule.
Sure.
So this basically can be used in any of the five turns?
So what I'm to understand, I don't know that for sure, but all it says here, yes, apparently what it's saying is, yeah, because here's what it says.
Is it a one-shot wonder?
No. If Archaon is your general and on the battlefield, the player rolls a dice and keeps the result hidden from his opponent.
Okay.
So at the start of the next battle round, before players determine who has first turn, so yeah, it can be used every single time, the player reveals the result. On a 1-3, the opponent takes the turn. On a 4+, the Chaos player takes the turn.
Okay.
So here's what I would think would be a better way to do it.
Okay.
And I'm not discrediting what you said, because you're just a nicer guy than I am. I'll put it that way. But rather than having people carry around Dixie cups and whatever else, and you know,
well, sure, you could take cloth, like maybe a cloth dice.
Well, no, but you understand. But I even got something better. if you think about what chaos is, what is the essence of chaos other than, you know,
randomness,
demons and fire? No. Demons and fire and you know, what are they? What are they? Do you remember that old cinematic trailer that they did for the Empire?
Yes.
Where the Chaos Warriors are coming out of the mist in the woods.
Yes. Great video.
Yeah. Well, if you remember that, what was the first look on that priest's face? Demoralized.
Yeah, he knew he was surrounded.
Well, but here's the thing. Everything about chaos is demoralizing when you really look at it from an adversarial standpoint.
It's entropy manifested.
Yeah. So I would think, great word, by the way. So I would think that you would want to have your opponent watch you roll this dice. And then, boom, you get that 4+. That person is completely demoralized because they know no matter what, that next round is not going to them.
I guess this is just the way I look at it is, you know, and I'm not a tournament guy. I mean, I'm a casual gamer that goes to tournaments.
Right.
But I'm not a tournament guy by any stretch of the imagination, nor do I ever intend to be ever again.
Folks, that's like the poker player telling everyone he barely ever plays poker. Just a little FYI.
If someone has to play that game, go ahead. I mean, I'm not gonna go crazy. Most of the guys, and I truly believe this. Most of the guys that we play are very honest guys. I think will it be used against some pranks? You know, will some prankster use this against you? Of course, you're going to have this at tournaments, but you also have to remember too, it's only if you're using Archaon. I'm sorry, but I just don't see all of these people starting to play Archaon. I just don't.
You don't think it could be another Nagash rush?
No, I don't think he's going to be in the Nagash rush.
Nerds running around. Okay.
Nope. I think you and I have said this before. Chaos players are chaos players.
Yeah.
You and I both know our chaos player guys. All the guys that we know that play chaos. They don't play anything but chaos.
Yeah, that's true. No, I will give you that. I'll concede to that. And again.
So I'm not worried about it. Like I said, you have to cheat. Whatever, go for it. I don't care.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I mean, that, like I said, that just makes you a far better person than myself. That's for damn sure. But so rounding out what we know about the Slaves of Darkness deliverable, and again, folks, this is going to go on pre-order for the book and the Get Started box, which they've redesigned the sculpts of the Chaos Warriors.
Oh,
and
beautiful sculpts.
You know what's funny? I love the old ones from a nostalgic standpoint, but I think they would look great on a chessboard now.
You have to understand, too, the old Chaos Warriors were made for rank and flank.
Yeah, they couldn't have swords all over the place.
They couldn't have dynamic poses because they were rank and flank guys. These new Chaos Warriors are phenomenal. I mean, even if the army ends up being a stinker, those models are phenomenal.
Right, right. And so, like I said, it comes out... pre-order on the 7th, and it's going to be in your sweaty palms on the 14th. But to round out this conversation here, of course, it wouldn't be, well, unless, of course, you're talking about Ogre Maw Tribes, it wouldn't be an army without some endless spells. You know, before I get into the spells, I do want to say one thing, Steve, and you got to help me with this. You got to be there for me, man, as a friend. You know what I'm not ready for with this army? I'm really not ready for it because, you know, I had it in 6th edition. I had it in 7th edition. I had it in 8th edition. I had it a little bit in End Times, and it was so nice during AOS 1, AOS 1.5, AOS 2, to not have it. And those bastards at GW have brought it back. You know what they brought back, Steve?
Enlighten me.
The phrase STD in referencing Slaves to Darkness.
Why does that bother you?
Because you know what? I'm going to have these giggly little nerds, these little twerps running around going, I play STD. And you know what? I can't have it, Steve. That was like, what, 12, 13 years of our life listening to that?
Well, now, wait a minute. Maybe they get pissed at us when we say gloobies. I mean, I think you're obsessing here, my friend.
You want to know something, Steve? Let me put it this way. Life is vexy enough. Let's not deal in hypotheticals here, all right? These people are weenie roasters.
I think it would be funny, though, if you're in a tournament. Hey, I've got STDs. Whoa, keep away from that guy.
Well, yeah. I won't be shaking his hand. But you know what? I'm really not looking forward to that reference every single time somebody puts an army on the table. You don't want to know something, though?
Well, I'll put it to you this way. I don't think you're going to have to worry about it too much, because I don't think there's going to be any rush on this army. I think the Chaos guys that play it are going to play it. I don't think you're going to start seeing slaves on the table everywhere.
Okay.
Me.
Interesting. Well, you know what? I hope, I'm kind of torn on it. I've got mixed emotions, and that's kind of what we've always talked about, mixed emotions, right? It's kind of like watching your brand new Cadillac go over a cliff with your mother-in-law in the back seat. I have mixed emotions because in one way I want to see this army do well. I want to see it because I love competing against them. But on the other hand, I'm like, meh, if it doesn't happen, I'll roll on. I've got bigger fish to fry.
I have to state that I think that would be more than just a disappointment to me. This is the Lord of the Apocalypse.
Yeah, and he's kind of been a clown.
This is the guy that brought down 8th edition. This is the guy. And this is the guy that blew up the world.
And if I seem to recall, didn't he kill Nagash too? In one of the many times.
Besides all of that history from Endless, the End Times,
right?
This is the guy who brought about the End Times. So to have him come back and be just a chump, or be just a guy that other people laugh at, like, oh, okay, this is the guy I'm going to shoot off the table in two turns. If he ends up being that guy, I'm going to be a little bit more than disappointed. This is the guy of all guys in Chaos.
Right.
This is the head honcho. He damn well better be as powerful as any of these other Chaos Lord models. This guy should be 24 wounds. This guy should be damn near impossible to kill. He's not Nagash. This guy is a warrior.
Yeah. Well, I got to tip my hat to that. That's the best way to put it. I'm not even going to try to say anything other than I hope you're right, because this guy really should have been something before. He was kind of a chump. I mean, he's got the Kingslayer sword, and it had negative one rend.
He should be the terror of the Warhammer world.
Yeah, exactly. But we'll see. Like I said, I'm a little skeptical, but we'll see. So rounding this out, we know that the new STD, Endless Spells, that are going to be coming out are, let me make sure I get their names right here. They're the Darkfire Demon Rift, the Realm Scourge Rapture, and the Eightfold Doom Sigil. Now, apparently, these things are the Darkfire Demon Rift. This thing is going to spew chaotic flames through a tear in some kind of reality, and it's going to grow stronger in the presence of magic, while the Realm Scourge Rapture reveals jagged shards of twisted metal thrusting up through a rent in the ground. It looks like a trench of some kind.
Yeah, love
and
it.
And the floating in Eightfold Doom Sigil. This thing harnesses the souls of the fallen to empower your Slaves of Darkness units, making them even more deadly so they can harvest ever more souls for the Dark Masters. Let me ask you a question. What do you think this thing does? I mean, this one, this Eightfold Doom Sigil, this thing's kind of... Okay, let's look at this again. So apparently this thing harnesses the souls of the fallen.
What that might end up doing is, like, if someone dies around it, it may grab the souls and then allow you to bring models back in your slaves army or something like that.
Or heals, since most heals, warriors have two wounds. The Maw Pot. Well, hopefully they did this. They'll do this one better than they didn't do the
Maw
Pot.
Well, most endless spells, and you usually have, like, for there's a three for almost every army.
Right.
What they end up usually being is one's an attacker, one's a buffer, and one's a barrier.
Yeah.
And at least that's what most of the endless spells end up being, which is fine. Yeah. I think they look cool. I mean, let's see how they do on the battlefield once we get the full rules.
That was a great way to put it. Say that one more time about the three endless spells.
Well, one is a buffer, okay?
Yeah.
One's a buffer, one's a barrier, and one's an attacker.
Gotcha. All right. Yeah, I like the way that you put that. That was
If you look at the Gloomspite Gits, perfect example. The Spider Cauldron, that's a buffer that helps you with your spells. You look at the barrier. That's your scuttle tide. You know, that's your thing that they can't get through. Okay. And then you have your attacker, which of course is your bad moon, mm-hmm. the malevolent moon.
Gotcha. All right. Good way to put it, man. Good way to put it. So that's the deliverable, folks. That's the new army coming out to round out the end of the year. The Archaon, the Lord of the Apocalypse, is going to be storming back in with Chaos Undivided, Slaves of Darkness. So we're going to be pre-ordering a new book that I will obviously be getting because, as I said, I buy every book. Whether I play the army or not, and a new Get Started box. So, Steve, any closing thoughts on the Slaves of Darkness before we keep rolling on to our main topic?
Yeah, if you're going to buy into Slaves of Darkness, I highly recommend you get that starter box. That is one hell of a deal. And the models and everything you need in there, if you're a beginning player, this would be a great box for you to pick up. And like I said, it's going to be pre-order this Saturday. So if you're into Slaves of Darkness or if you've been keeping an eye on Chaos as your army to be, now's a great time to jump in and for a great price.
Well, I got to tell you, and I think that the Slaves of Darkness themselves are really going to come correct. I mean, here's what I've always loved about the Chaos Warriors themselves. I mean, these guys are no chumps. They have a 4+ save. They got 2 wounds. I think their bravery is 6 or 7, if I remember right. Or I'm sure they can get some type of buff on their bravery with,
usually
bears.
Through banners, yeah.
Yeah. But here's the interesting thing. I think these guys have a 5+ ward save against mortal wounds because of their rune shields.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just think about that. I mean, these guys here could, for a long time, Chaos Warriors were compared to Liberators, right? They were kind of that type of an ilk, if you will, as far as that.
Which is a travesty.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a couple of things that I'm wondering if they're going to fix on the Chaos Warriors. Like, for instance, I know they had multiple hand weapons, but I remember one of them that always bothered me was their halberd. This thing was 2 attacks. It was 4s by 4s, no rend.
A halberd without rend.
Exactly.
I mean,
you got Phoenix Guard, little elves, little 180-pound
elves. You
have
Stormvermin that have halberds that have rend.
Yes. I never understood that, and they always looked the best with halberds, and it was almost like, well, I can't take these on these guys now. But I'm wondering if they're going to fix that awful 4-to-wound. You know, they had this great 3x4, if I remember right. Or was it 4x3? No, they didn't have the destruction thing. They were 3s by 4s. And that was always a huge stumbling block. I remember playing against plenty of Chaos guys. They would go to roll their wound and just whiff it. And that was always nice for me, but it was always horrible for them. So we'll see what they're going to do with the advancements of this army. And I think this army is going to be good in some ways. But I don't want people to get their hopes up because it just seems to me, after what we just talked about, that they're going to be, like I said, polishing the tin.
Yeah, I hope that it is a fun version of Chaos, because we do have a lot of Chaos guys here in the Chicagoland area. I've always said that Chicagoland is Chaos. We've always had Chaos armies in this area. And I'm really hoping that our guys that are waiting for this army are going to get a good, solid book.
Yeah, we need to ask everyone out there. I mean, wherever you live, what is your Chaos army of like, we live in the Chicagoland area, Chaos around here. Where do you live? What's predominant out there? Are you more of a Magikin? You more of
I've talked to guys at Adepticon that have said they don't have a Chaos army to be found.
Wow.
They don't have a death army to be found. Like, a lot of the guys are playing either order or destruction. And then another area, it's all, all Chaos and nothing else. You know, it really does depend on the gaming communities that you have in your area. I know that since 6th edition, Chaos has been huge in Chicago. We are, one of the realms of Chaos.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? Like I said, it's going to be interesting to see what the army does. I am excited for it. I know that my comments didn't really seem so, but I'm skeptical because, like I said, I think the last couple of books have kind of fallen flat. Hey, I hope you're enjoying the Grimdark Live experience and the show. If you want to support the show, please like and subscribe on YouTube and follow us on our podcast. This way, you'll be alerted when we post new content. If you'd like to support Grimdark Live further, head over to grimdarklive.com, get a t-shirt, dice, Or there's Patreon, which makes our show possible, keeps our mics on and the lights buzzing. Big thanks to everyone, past, present, and future, who have supported Grimdark Live. We do this because of all of you, and of course, we will continue doing this for as long as we can. Okay, you guys ready for more Grimdark Live? Let's get back to the show. But we're moving on, man. So this past week, Steve, we had one of our club's war meets. Mm-hmm. We got together, we played some AOS games, and like always, when there's a game of Age of Sigmar being played, rules questions arise, and some misinterpretations, if you will. So let's hear it, man. This is your topic.
Yeah. One of the biggest problems that we have in the community is that a lot of people who play this game have certain rules that they've interpreted in a certain way. And one of the most common ones was, obviously, and we talked about this at great length, the most common one that we had recently was the trolls.
Right.
When the trolls are throwing their rocks, a lot of people, when they first read this rule, they thought, oh, so it's the amount of guys in the other unit that's being thrown at that I'm basing the hit or miss on. And what they didn't understand is if they really read the rules clearly, and the rules are clear if you read the paragraph.
Yep, I can read it if you want me to.
Yeah, go ahead, please, read it.
Here it is.
Word for word.
Word for word, here it is. And we're referring to the rock gut Trogoths here, folks. Throwing boulders. Here's what it says. In your shooting phase, pick one enemy unit within 12 inches of this unit.
This unit.
Your rock gut Trogoths. Pick one enemy unit within 12 inches of this unit and visible to it, and roll a dice. If the roll is equal to or less than the number of models in this unit, meaning the Trogoths unit, that enemy unit suffers D3 mortal wounds.
So basically what that's saying, folks, is that if you are, and this is for people who face the trolls, if you have a troll unit that has only three models in it, they're going to have a less likelihood to hit you because they need a three or less to be able to hit you. So basically what it's saying is the bigger the troll unit, I mean, you have to understand, folks, the trolls are just reaching into the ground, picking up a big rock and just whipping it randomly at you. I mean, they're not even aiming. They're just throwing it. And so the more trolls that are whipping these rocks, they have a higher propensity to hit you, okay? And of course, a small group of trolls whipping rocks are going to be less likely to hit you.
Exactly. And that makes sense. But
yes,
yeah,
it does.
Another misinterpretation.
And another, well, there's, well, believe me, this game is rife with misinterpretations.
Yeah.
A lot of the times what happens is a club makes a rule, like we encountered this weekend with endless spells. That is largely a, well, at least what we discovered. And if someone can prove us wrong, please, you know, dial it in, you know. Endless spells on the table are not limited. So I know somebody's going, what? What do you mean by that? Well, we had a situation where Pat this weekend had Scuttletide and I had Scuttletide. And Pat threw the spell, and I said, wait a minute, Pat, I don't think you can have the same endless spell on the table. So Pat's like, well, I've never heard that rule. And then we asked a couple guys behind us who were our regular tournament players, and they said, yeah, you can only have one endless spell on the table of the same kind at a time. Okay. So we opened up
the rule book, yeah.
The endless spells rule book, yeah. Right. And Malign Sorcery. And we looked at the predatory spells and we looked at the endless spells in general, the rule, and we did not see anything that said that you could not have the same endless spell on the table. Now,
yeah,
if it's out there, if the rule's out there hidden in that book somewhere, okay. We had three different people look at the book. Our buddy Nick looked at the book and he was like, I don't see that rule anywhere. And, you know, he read through it. He read through the endless spells. He read through the predatory spells. So once again, you know, notwithstanding, it goes back to, is that a rule that's been agreed upon in tournaments, or is that an actual factual GW rule?
Let me go back to this because, you know, folks, I'm not the best TO in the world, but I TO an awful lot of games. in tournaments. And let me go back to, because I'm going to put a little bit of the blame back on GW. So I'm going to clarify, because, you know, when we were talking in the game, I remember I said, you know, is that a house tournament rule or is that a GW as written rule? And that's where a lot of times the confusion lies. But here's what the endless spell can, let me sum up the endless spell confusion. Sure. You know, I think it can be solved really simply by GW with a freaking index. GW rules need a freaking index. Are you hearing me, GW? Get an index in your damn books. The information is always where you think it is. The information isn't always where you think it is, what I'm trying to say. A great example is that in matched play, now I'm going to say this real slow for everyone to hear me. A great example of what I'm trying to say here when we talk about this is that in match play, you can only have one of any named endless spell in play per army, not per table. This is where the misinterpretation comes in. So let me say that again. You can, in matched play, you can have only one of any named endless spell in play per army at a time. So if I'm playing Steve, I've got my Nobblers and he's got his Trolls. I can have an endless spell. He can have an endless spell. And if they're the same one, if we both have the Burning Head, so be it. It's one per army, not one per table. However, this is only mentioned in the army building segment of the matched play rules and nowhere in the page that details endless spells. In fact, that page actually says you can take as many as you have models for. It is clearly written for open or narrative and not matched play, but doesn't highlight that fact. So I got to poo-poo GW a little bit on you know, aiding and abetting some of the, you know, misunderstandings here. So.
Yeah, and there was also, there is a great video out on YouTube, and it is
Grimdark Live.
it's another crew, but the guy made a video about misinterpreted rules. The most, I think it says, the six most misinterpreted rules in the game, like piling in. Is very specific. Oh Lord,
that might be the worst one, Steve. That one might be the worst.
Piling in says that you have to go near the nearest model. You have to move towards the nearest model. Now, I can tell you right now, in almost every single game of AOS I have ever played, you see guys taking a guy and moving him further towards an open spot rather than going towards the nearest model. Now, but you know what it is? It's almost like the community has rebelled. And the community has just said, that's the dumbest rule ever. And it is. If you see an open spot, a warrior is not going to go, well, gee, this guy standing here is a little bit closer, so I'm going to stand behind my guy and be useless instead of running 3 inches over here to an open spot where I can get at someone. The dumbest rule ever. It makes no sense. And it doesn't even reflect what a warrior would intelligently do in a battle. If he sees a spot that is open, he's going to run towards the nearest spot that's open where he can get at the enemy.
Yeah.
Not stand behind a guy. Well, this guy in front of me is the nearest model. It's moronic.
And the other one, remember the old electric slide?
Yes. Well, but the electric slide, you know, made sense.
Yeah.
You could, you know, if guys are piling in and they're going at each other, a guy is not going to stand behind his buddy and say, you know what, Frank, I'm not going to run over there and help you on that left flank. I'm going to stand behind here and hope you die so I can get in. It is the most moronic thing you have. I mean, that rule is god awful. They need to just say piling in should just be piling in. And this whole thing about, oh, well, you're trapped against a model if you're in base contact. Why? You're telling me a guy is going to constantly stand still in battle? Why can't guys just do, as we used to say, the electric slide and just move over and allow more guys to get in? Oh, well, that guy's got somebody swinging at him. They're all swinging at him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like one guy is targeting one guy. You have if a guy has got three models in base contact with him, what do you think? One guy's just swinging at him? They're all,
you know,
swinging
I think
him.
What they're trying to do is I think what they, when they work on a mechanic like that, when they tweak it, I think they're trying to go for the not Warcry effect. You know, in a game like Warcry, you're smashing into each other. I mean, the heat is on right away. I mean, it's like there is no, period of feeling each other out. You're right in there in battle right away. And I think when in the back in the olden days, when you did the electric slide, close combat battles were over pretty quick because you got more into combat. And I think they were trying to elongate the game, maybe the round, you know,
who knows? I mean, it to me, combat should be fluid. It should be sensible. A guy is not going to stand behind someone because he's close to a model when he can see an open spot 2 inches away and get in there and be effective as a soldier.
That's true.
It makes no sense whatsoever. Now, because I cannot stand this rule, because I despise this rule, I have a rule. If you do not have a 2-inch range, I will not play you as a model.
Okay.
Which is why I love my trolls. I don't ever have to do any kind of sliding. I don't ever have to do any piling in. All of my trolls back up the trolls in the front row because of the 2-inch range.
Right.
So I never have to do any crazy slides. I can just, the whole unit fights. So whenever I play an army, if I don't see a 2-inch range on a weapon, I'm not playing that army.
Right.
Because I don't want to go through some nitpicker who's going to say, oh, well, you know, this guy has to stay. No, I can't take it. I just want to play a game. I don't want to get stuck in the minutia.
Yeah, you know what? And I do agree with that. But again, some people are more into the experience than the game itself. But, you know, one thing I want to touch on real quick, and then I'm going to turn your piece back over to you, is another thing I thought about in the Endless Spells. And again, I'm going to kind of poo-poo on GW here a little bit. GW hasn't fully given them clear lines between regular spells and endless spells. And even where the game is now, that still isn't the case. Now I'm talking as a person that has read every one of the books, including the rule book. Yes, folks, I've read the rule book. And what I mean by that is this means that people get confused when things like range boosters don't work on endless spells, but counter spells do. Now here's what I mean. I know you guys are like, what the hell did you just say? Now, here's an example. Endless spells ranges don't get any buffs from a wizard on a Balewind or a wizard of an Astroloth mm-hmm. bearer. So,
yep.
But that's a huge mistake that's made.
All the time.
And I realize that it's been FAQ'd, but you can wipe your butt with those FAQs because I would safely determine that 60% to 70% of the community doesn't read the FAQs. They look over their shoulder and go, hey, Steve, what did the FAQ say about Molog?
Yeah,
what did
the exactly. FAQ?
They don't ever read
exactly.
them.
Exactly. Well, they rely on their crew in the store.
Yeah, it's the Dewey Decimal System. Do we have an FAQ? So it's been FAQ'd. I get that. But endless spell ranges cannot be extended. Now, the problem where this all started, and I'm going to take you down because I blame you a little bit right here, Steve, because of, you know, when you played Daughters of Cain. So again, folks, I'm blaming Steve. You guys can feel free to blame him too on this one. So the problem was Marathi. So GW, instead of fixing.
I never played Marathi.
No, but instead of fixing the broken rules of a single overpowered model, you know, they nerfed the endless spells for everyone. Now, here's what it was. When Marathi was in her little self, her teeny tiny self model, she could double her spell range. And that meant that she could fling those endless spells pretty far. And for example, you know, let's take Greminids, you know, that thing could go 36-inch range with her. So GW fixed that. But folks still don't pay attention. So that's still today a missed, and here's the problem. I'm going to give you an example of something like Adepticon, where you've got, you know, hundreds of guys chucking dice. One guy at a table on the far end of the facility. The TOs are way the hell on the opposite end. Maybe that other player, his opponent, doesn't know that you can't do that.
Exactly.
So he stands up on Balewind Vortex and he moves Geminids or Burning Head or something another 6 inches.
Exactly. Yeah, it happens all the time at tournaments. All the time.
These are some of the misunderstood things. But anyway, sorry about that. Go ahead.
No, it just leads into a greater point. Now, I know what the counter argument's going to be. It's going to be, well, you know what? If you don't read the books, you know, clearly, then it's your own damn fault.
Okay.
I get it. And it's a valid argument.
Yeah, and I agree with that too.
Argument. But the point is that so many groups of young gamers, especially, or newbies in general, rely on those veterans to teach them the rules. Mm-hmm. And if the veterans are using these house rules, and house rules are fine, GW encourages house rules. You know, they've said if you have a rule that works for your gaming community, your group, and your store, go for it. You know, they've always been like that because their whole idea is we want people playing the game. Okay. And if the game is better for you as a group by changing a rule, God bless you.
Yeah.
You know, go for it.
And I think there's a need for those rules.
Yes, there is. Because if, for instance, I'm the leader of a particular group, and I know that most of the guys in my group are novice players, I am going to want to make the gaming experience easier for them initially. Okay. So I may not count rules that are kind of wonky and kind of like out there, because it would be confusing for those new guys, right? Now, I know people are going to say, well, you should be teaching the new guys, you know, the rules the way they're supposed to be. Yeah, easier said than done.
Yeah.
Okay? A community needs to build first. Mm-hmm. You need to get guys interested in the game. And then gradually, you know, you could say, okay, now, like, for instance, piling in. You may be very liberal with that and say, you know, yeah, you know, you pile in, you're going towards the nearest enemy. Whereas somebody, you know, who's, you know, the GW professional type, you know, the tournament player type, they may look at it and they may go, no, you got to go. You know, this guy is, you know, one and a half inches and the other guy is, oh, God. I mean, you know, it'll drive you nuts.
Right.
But it may be easier for a group to play that way to kind of get people into the flavor of the game. And then you could start cleaning up the rules.
Yeah, but I also think, you know, let me kind of touch on what you said before. You know, most veteran players, and look, I know that right now, you know, you're not a big tournament player, but you used to be. I was, you know, I would still consider myself a mild tournament player. And GW as written rules versus a tournament or TO tickler rule.
Oh, they're completely different.
Well, yeah, a lot of this misinterpretation occurs when folks play a lot of tournaments where they're exposed to tournament style house rules. And
yes.
And I understand there's a need for those house type rules. You know, for instance, certain battle tomes are terrible. Carajan Overlords, Stormcast, you know, certain units are basically unfixable by points because of their design. Vanguard, yeah. Hunters, Bloodstalkers, blah, blah, blah. The Realm Gate,
sure.
The Realm of Battle rules are a nightmare unless you heavily house rule them. But this still doesn't give excuse to a player, casual or competitive, not knowing to some level the rules as written first and the tournament rules second. You know, the as written language choice, I guess, if I had to, again, I'm throwing another dagger at GW, you know, is a problem because GW sometimes writes rules in a very casual sense without giving a strict definition of the terms as they relate to the game. This case can result in at times, you know, what we had, you know, mass interpretations where we got one table talking to another table, which can lead to confusion. Now, I'll freely admit that some people do overplay these and do jump, I guess we call it a very odd conclusions, which are very abnormal. And often this is done more for causing drama than anything else, you know, hence the topic of this very segment. But I think that's another big piece. It's monkey see, monkey do, right? Is kind of what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
So, I mean, you know, let's go back to this past weekend, you know, where we had our club's war meet. You know, another mm-hmm. thing that was brought up was I was playing 4,000 points. This is what I do want to bring up here, folks. The Nobblers are so feared by Steve and another one of our club guys, Dave.
Hold on. Whoa. Hold on one sec. I got to call your doctor again.
No, I'm just saying the Nobblers are so feared that. Those two guys had to gang up on my Nobblers, and that's how feared they are. I just want everyone to know that. But so, no.
How many total Nobblers did I kill?
Oh, I don't know. Not enough though, because those, you know, for every one you kill, they pop out two more. They're like gremlins.
It had to be 150.
I don't want to tell you how they reproduce though, because you might pass out. But here's the gist of it. I also, on the other end of it, I had to play my Ogre Maw Tribe. You're playing basically 4,000 points versus 4,000 points in a 1v2 game.
Correct.
But I was playing my Ogre Maw Tribe, Beastclaw Raider, Boulderhead Maw Tribes, God, that's a long name, list on the other side of my Nobblers. Mm-hmm. And in this build, I had a Eurobad Battalion. I'm not going to get into what that is, but in this battalion, it states that if the unmodified hit roll for an attack made with a melee weapon used by a model from this battalion is a 6, that inflicts one mortal wound on the target in addition to any normal damage. That's the basic rule of Eurobad. Mm-hmm. So the key word there is unmodified. A reroll, if you get a 6, and it's, you know, if you reroll a 1, which I was able to do, that's a modified 6. That no longer gives you a mortal wound. It just wounds through as normal. So those 6s in the case, they only did regular wounds, not mortals. Now, here's the funny part. I was playing the rule as written. It's, if I can reroll a 1 and that 1 gives me a 6, that's not a mortal wound. But I had, you know, another guy just being good friends at another table say, oh, no, that's a mortal wound. No, stop. Wait a minute. That's not a mortal wound, because what part of modified or unmodified do you not understand? If I can turn a 1, a reroll of a 1 into a 6, that's a modified 6. That makes sense?
That is a situation where you are going to have three different guys give you three different interpretations of what they think unmodified means. Some guy's going to say, well, wait a minute. A reroll is not a modification. A reroll is a reroll. Well, and then a modification would be like a -1 or a +1 or whatnot.
What they mean by modification, and I've made this call as a TO, what they mean by a modification is anything other than the single chance roll.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you're going to get, and I guarantee you, if I put you in a room with two other TOs, every single one of you would have a different interpretation.
Well, and this is the difference. This is where you get, when you talk about the old timers, you know, teaching the new guys. This is the difference between GW rules as written. I mean, look, modified is still modified. If I can reroll a 1 and it gets me a better result, is that modified or not? Or because if it wasn't modified, I couldn't reroll it.
Yeah, well, and then you're going to have someone counter that and say, well, wait a minute, is a reroll a modification?
It
or
is
simply a reroll.
If I get something because I'm part of something, that's a modification. Mm-hmm. I can do that because of Eurobet. I can do that.
That is something that honestly, here's what I would love to see. And I don't know if we'll ever see this. I would love to see some kind of Council of 13 for TOs, where TOs could kind of get together maybe once every couple months and say, okay, you know, how are we? Here are some situations, guys, that are coming up in the gaming community. Here are some rules that are kind of wonky from GW, and we're looking, and there's no FAQ yet, and we're looking for some kind of declaration for tournaments. I think that would be very beneficial.
Right.
And there's no reason it couldn't happen. We have a lot of TOs in this area. You know, we've got guys from Indiana. We've got guys from up north. They're all over the place. So basically the Chicagoland, Minneapolis, you know, Wisconsin, all that like kind of, you know, upper Midwest area, a lot of those TOs could get together, and it wouldn't even have to be a get together in a physical sense. You guys could get on Skype or something, for God's sakes, but right. It would need to be something that could be ironed out among the TOs. Like, we got to come to a consensus on this. You know, we've got to agree or disagree. We've got to take a vote. And then, you know, the majority would rule. And that's the way every tournament should be worked out. Now, right. I know that'll never happen because, you know, a lot of TOs, you know, and I'm not a TO, but I know a lot of them. And, you know, they're guys that are very set in their ways. You know, they run their tournament a specific way, and they're not going to, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, they want to be the tallest hog in the trough, even if that
means... I don't even know if it's the case of being the tallest hog in the trough. I just think that they're saying, look, I'm the guy that's putting the effort out. You know, I'm the guy that's spending months in preparation for this tournament. I'm going to run it the way I feel it needs to be, you know, run. And that's it. And they're not going to cede their authority to anyone. And that's okay, because they are the guy that's putting in 2 months, you know, of their own time to do it.
Yeah. No. And look, they always say it's 1 month of labor for every day of a tournament. So
yeah,
I completely believe that. But yeah, you know, and so when you look at what we're talking about here, you know, rules misunderstandings and rule misinterpretations, you know, there's a lot of factors in there. But I got to go back to the source. And you know, in my day job, I'm an engineer. We live and die by specifications and manuals and you know things like that, right?
I totally agree.
We had a saying in school called RTFM, and that's, you know, read the effing manual, and there's a lot of truth to that. And I think that, you know, when we go back and look at this thing, a few thoughts that I have, you know, GW still needs to approach rules, and I know they hide behind this bourgeois crappy statement they always say of, oh, we just want people to engage in conversation. Yeah, we can still do that, but I still think GW needs to approach rules in a much more formal structure. You know, more recently we've seen them defining the order of events within the turn sequence in order to clarify how abilities with certain battle tomes work, especially when they work in conjunction with other battle tome abilities.
Well, I think what can be said there is that most of your game designers are right brain people. They're creative. They're artists. Yeah. But yet they're being asked to apply left brain, logical, mathematical rules to their creativity. And therein lies the problem.
Yeah. And I think that what you just said there, it does still show that clearly there are some more formal understandings that are happening, but it's not clearly communicated within the rules as they are currently structured in the core rule book. There's still people that if they are reading them, you know, maybe it's a comprehension thing. You know, and as I just noted, you know, GW, they really do need to clarify their rules more strictly in terms of the three modes of play. You know, I know we just, you know, a few minutes ago, I talked about match play versus open, and you know how different rules are interpreted
and
as far as endless spells.
They need to shore that up completely. I mean, guys, let's admit it. I mean, can we just say, you know, can we just talk about the elephant in the room?
Yeah.
There is not a single person I have ever met ever that has played open play.
Yeah,
no one plays it.
I honestly think that.
Can we just, you know, stop the nonsense and just get to the match play, because that's what everybody's playing.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, you know, yeah, you, Steve, 1000% correct. GW also, though, they do need to clarify their rules in a more strict term as far as the three modes of play are concerned. I still think they need to do that, because I'm sure there's some weird, you know, basement dweller out there with his, you know, three other buddies that still plays open play. But the most suitable to me to do this would be to define the rules purely for match play and then introduce the other two modes after with their own specific modifications and options to the, you know, to the match play standard. Because, you know, this makes sense to me in what you just said, Steve, because most treat match play as the standard. And it's the only
mode.
Yes,
it is the standard.
Yeah, it's the only mode that has a unified approach.
Yes, it's the only mode that anyone's playing.
Yeah, and allowing open and narrative to bolt on to the top, I guess, is much more sensible.
It's hubris on their part, because they don't want to admit that their open play original format was the most god-awful thing that ever was created.
It was a great way to figure out if the guy across the table was an asshole.
Believe it. And it was also the worst concept ever. And they don't want to admit that they were wrong. So they keep it in there. It's completely true. And I guarantee if I got a GW game designer in a room alone and I was talking to him about it, I guarantee you they'd say the same thing. You know, this is their way of saying, okay, you know, for you, you know, two people out there in the Games Workshop universe here, we still have open play. It's still viable. It's a joke.
I played three games of open play and all three times left there aggravated. You know, it's funny. It's kind of rounding out this topic here. You know, in our war meet, you know, talking about misunderstandings or rules, sometimes it's just an oversight when new battle tomes or books are given.
Absolutely,
in.
It is. You know, like I think the case of the trolls,
or the case of my tyrant's ability, bully of the first degree.
Yes.
Now, what happened this past weekend was this ability states that, you know, with the affected unit, this ability stays with the affected unit, whether or not the tyrant is alive or dead. And what that is.
And someone had misinterpreted it as that at the minute the tyrant dies,
the
units lose that ability.
Yeah, no. In the battle tome, it clearly states that that unit gets that, you know, no battle shock for the remainder of the game.
Yes.
So it
says nothing about the tyrant dying.
No, but you know what? It's a misunderstanding. And I think the other problem is people are, and you know, we talked about this last week. My closing thoughts last week were on pettiness, or last week, the week before Thanksgiving was on pettiness. And I think a lot of times people kind of are somewhere in that weird place between pettiness and I don't want to be rude. I want to get a good score on my sportsmanship. So they never say to somebody, can I see that rule? Can you show me that? You know, can we go through that again?
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there really isn't anything wrong with that. And as a matter of fact, I think it's one of those things that,
it strengthens the gaming community because it solidifies a rule based on evidence.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So good stuff, man. So do you think we'll ever clear up rules, misunderstandings and misconceptions?
Nope. I think this is the curse of Games Workshop. They have the greatest fantasy game in the universe and they have some of the most confusing rules.
Yeah.
Now I know that your bookworm is going to look at that and say, you know, oh, that's not true. You guys are just lazy and you don't want to read the books. Not true. As a matter of fact, most of us read the books all the time. You've said you've read the Ogre book through and through four times.
Four times. Yeah.
Four times.
Yeah.
I've read the Gloomspite book at least two times.
Yeah.
At least the parts that are pertinent to my army.
Right.
And like I said, it just goes back to if you're going to create a rule and you're a game designer, think twice before you finalize that and put it in a book. Mm-hmm. Look at it and say, okay, is this going to be something that's going to be open to interpretation? Is this going to be something that's going to be tricky by the way we worded it? And that's all I ask is that, you know, when GW puts out a book, look at the rule that you're creating and think, is this going to cause trouble in the community?
Sure.
Because if they say to themselves, well, we never make those kind of problems, it's just you dummies that don't get it, then why do you have an FAQ?
Yeah, there you go. But, you know, it is a vicious circle because even with that FAQ, I'm willing to bet 7/10 of the people out there don't read them. They get the information from their buddy or whatever. And maybe 7/10 is too much. But I don't think that everybody out there is doing their due diligence as far as doing their
New gamer. Think about a new gamer. The FAQ is in a very obscure part of the GW website in the Warhammer gaming community.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's a
great
point.
Whereas a new player would think, well, wow, wouldn't the FAQ for Warhammer be in the Warhammer section?
You would think.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not very friendly to newbies. But I think GW's philosophy is, well, we know that most people, when they come into this game, are coming into it where there's already an established community that will guide them through the process, or there's a store manager that'll help them figure that stuff out.
Right.
I guess that would be their defense.
Yeah. And that's a good defense because that's what they have to, that could be an expectation, but let's tuck this topic in, man. I mean, this is a great topic and I don't think we're going to solve it tonight, although I sure would love to, but I do like your idea of a Council of 13 and going right back to your Skaven roots on that one.
A public service announcement brought to you by Frag Factory 3D Printing. Many of us have thousands of dollars in miniatures, yet we play on flat tables with books and overturned Tupperware to act as our fantasy and sci-fi landscapes. We've all drooled over the tables we see in magazines, lush with beautifully created terrain from all genres. The crew at Frag Factory 3D Printing want to wipe that drool from your chin and put it firmly on your friends and fellow gamers when they see your setup. Alien landscapes, desert wastelands, futuristic cities, fantasy outposts, elven forests, demonic stronghold, and so much more. Find out what you've been missing by checking us out on Facebook at Frag Factory 3D Printing or send us an email at fragfactory3dprinting@gmail.com. Bring your own files or we will help you find what you've been searching for. Take your gaming to the next level with Frag Factory 3D Printing. We print life into your games. Tell them Grimdark Live sent you, and your first hour of printing is free.
Hey gang, in all seriousness, get your terrain on the table and get it with Frag Factory 3D Printing. And remember, tell them Grimdark Live sent you and they'll give you 1 hour free. You can get them via email at fragfactory3dprinting@gmail.com or their Facebook page, Frag Factory 3D Printing.
Frag Factory 3D Printing, printing life into your games.
Now, back to the show. So here it is, man, the question of the day. We've gotten to that point of the show. So,
sure.
Steve, I think I might already know the answer to this one before I ask it to you, but I'm going to ask it to you.
Go for it.
As we close the year, now, mind you, you know, we got this show, we got the show next week, and we got the show the week after that. It's going to be our last two shows after this one for the year. But as we close the year, which army had the biggest impact on the 2019 season?
Wow. I would love to answer that question in four parts.
Okay, shoot.
And I will tell you why. Because I think it has to be faction-based. If I were going to say which armies made the most impact this year for destruction, I would say Gloom Spites. And I remember, I'm talking the whole year. Okay, so the Gloomies have had more time than, like, the Orcs.
Sure, okay.
So I would say the Gloomies for destruction, the Daughters for order, Slaanesh for chaos. Wow. And death, I would have to say, wow, tough. I would have to say for death, the Flesh Eater Courts.
Wow. That one I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, because, well, released this year. I'm assuming your question was for books that were released this year.
Yeah, yeah. As we close out this year, yeah, you know, which armies had the biggest impact on 2019?
The Flesh Eater Courts have just gone on a tear with the Gristle Gore. So, yeah, I think that would, I could not answer that. If I had to pick one out of all of them, I would have to rely on their victories at tournaments, so I would have to go with Slaanesh.
Interesting. Okay, you completely, I had it in my mind a totally different answer that, you know, and it's funny, when I was thinking about this question and kind of the ensuing conversation that was going to take place with it, I immediately, and I don't know why, and then I remembered that they weren't a 2019 release, I went to Nighthaunt. And Nighthaunt, I realized pretty quickly, and it doesn't even matter now because I think they were 2018. I think they were the end of 20. I think they were October.
Yeah, they were last year. Mm-hmm.
But Nighthaunt really gave me that that old Halloween feeling. And of course, you know, we even did a Monster Monday on
Great Army,
Lady
Still
Orlinda.
Great Army.
Yeah, and you know, and it's funny. I so anticipated the release you know, the Ogre Maw tribes, and I, you know, just lamented here, complained, which next week, by the way, I am going to do a faction focus on the list because I think people have been unnecessarily mother effing them. But I would have to say that for me, I boiled it down to two army books and two armies that were released in 2019 that I think were really, that had huge impacts. And I'm going to tell you why the one edged out the other one, out very closely.
Laying on me.
Heat Knights of Slaanesh, when that book first came out, I almost started playing the pervert army. And you know, I'm not a Slaanesh guy, but no. I really almost did it. And I liked the originality that it brought to the game. You know, the Thane of Slaanesh, you know, I thought was such a cool looking model. Not only did it do that, but you could a la do a Herdstone. You could wound yourself and you could pull, you know, summon models through it. And I thought the thematics of that were just, you know, just got my imagination going. But the army as it was written, you know, the backstory, the three different factions, when you looked at the Pretenders, the Invaders, the Godseekers, you know, I was completely enthralled with the army. And but you know, when I really looked at and look at the proof in the pudding, you know, as you just said, tournaments all over the place are handing winning trophies to slannish players.
Yep.
So I'm not begrudging them. But the one that really, I think, tipped the scale as far as had the most impact, and not only from a gameplay, but also from a model, a storyline, a composition as far as the book, the synergies within that book, hands down, it's got to be Gloomspite.
Interesting.
Yeah, and you know, I'm, you know, Gloomspite isn't my first army by any means. I would think for sure you'd be saying this. I expected you to say this, as a matter of fact.
No, because I'm being honest with myself. You know, as much as I love them, I have to be honest, and I have to look at it, you know, as, you know, all the books that came out this year, you just don't see Gloomspite Gitz winning any tournaments.
Yeah, because, well, I think there's a couple of reasons for that that we can get into on our next show. I'd like to talk about that, as a matter of fact. But, you know, when you look at the, you know, everything from the Bad Moon to the Bad Moon Loon Shrine, to the backstory, to, you know, the character development, I think one of the greatest models they have ever released. I will say this. I think the first and second best models they have ever released are in this book, and that's obviously the Rockcut Tragos in first place, and I think the Mangler Squigs are definitely in second place. I think that by introducing new units, I think the Sneaky Snufflers, one of the most creative units ever released. I think I thought the Spore Splatta Fanatics were pretty clever. I know a lot of people didn't like them. I thought they were great. So for me, I think the army that had the biggest impact on 2019, hands down, Gloomspite Gitz.
Interesting.
And I don't think it's going to be Slaves of Darkness. I know people are saying, well, Slaves of Darkness is now.
No, I wouldn't even consider Slaves, really, because the book's not even going to be out for more than a couple of weeks, then we're going to be in the new year.
And you know what? I just, like I said, folks, polishing the same old tin. That's my feeling. So, well, here we are, man. Closing thoughts. Steve, you got some closing thoughts for us?
Yeah, I do, actually. Couple of months ago, my brother had a heart attack, and he's only 2 years older than me. And just this, and he's fine now. He got into surgery, and, you know, quick enough, and he had no damage or anything.
That's great.
And yeah, it is great. Believe me, because he's my brother and I love him dearly. And then this past weekend when I was gaming, I had a terrible, terrible back pain, which I'm getting checked and everything, you know, so it just kind of made me think about some of the stories that I've heard in the gaming community, folks, about, you know, we like to think that we're going to be playing this game forever, but we're only one injury or one illness away from losing that ability, from losing those friends that, you know, we game with, you know, from being bedridden, God forbid, for any of us. And so I guess when you think about being petty, when you think about, and this is something that goes back to what you talked about, when you think about being petty, when you think about maybe arguing with your buddy over something, or when you think about a rule that, you know, you could otherwise just let go, you know, for the sake of the flow of the game, you may want to think twice, guys. You may want to understand that we're only here for a limited amount of time. And we have even less time to play the game. So when you do get together with your buddies, you might want to enjoy that time a little bit more and appreciate it a little bit more than you probably do. Because believe me, you know, you're only one car accident, you're only one cancer diagnosis, you're only, you know, one injury away from losing it all. And that's my closing thought.
Yeah, you know, never truer words were spoken, man. I mean, you never know. I mean, appreciate everything you have. You know what that reminded me of when you were saying that was I was watching an old interview with Warren Zevon, you know, Werewolves of London guy that, you know, Lawyers, Guns, and Money singer died. Mm-hmm. They asked him when he had horrible cancer and he knew it wasn't going to make it. They said, you know, what are you any advice you have for anybody that you going through this? And he said, yeah, enjoy every bite of every sandwich.
Yep. No, it's very true.
Yeah. Good closing thoughts, man. I appreciate that one. So there you have it, folks. Great way to end the show. Another great show.
Dark Live. I'd like to thank you for slumming it through another show with us for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Age of Sigmar worlds. We'll be back live next Thursday, so until then, remember, roll them dice fun and fair, and don't be a frickin' short pants. If you missed the live show, you can catch us again right here on the next Grimdark Live podcast. Never fear, gang. There'll be more great content from Grimdark Live throughout the week with Monster Mondays, Table War Tuesdays, Warhammer Wednesdays, Grimdark Grudge Matches, and a ton more. So stay tuned and stay grim, all you dice chucking, glue sniffing gamer goons. You're all awesome.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to stop sniffing glue.
Remember, embrace the main message here from Grimdark Live, and that's a social contract we have between gamers and the commitment we have to each other and this community. We're only as good as our last game. Check us out at GrimdarkLive.com. Don't forget to give our channel a like or subscribe if you haven't already done so. So long, Grimdark Goons. Until next time, may the dice gods bless you and your sweaty palms.